No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. I got the legendary. If you want. Mm. We got the legendary Big U in the building. How you feeling?
I'm good. Blessed.
Moving around, making noise.
Yeah. The pen is at work.
Yesterday, I was really like watching the whole Hip Hop Uncovered. I finished the last five episodes because I had only seen the first one. And I'm like, man, this is a good job when I get to watch TV for 5 hours. And that's basically what I have to do to get my job done the next day.
You just finished it?
I had only seen the first one or two episodes prior.
Everybody's like that.
It's weird.
They either seen 1, 2, 3, and 4. Mm. But no, and a lot of people haven't seen 5 and 6, so they don't see the culmination. Mm. They only see the Big U and the Jerry Curl. So a lot of people is like,
I definitely wrote that down. I was like, man, that was a hell of a Jerry Curl.
My sister did a couple of those.
For real?
Yeah.
There was a lot of maintenance with the Jerry Curl?
Back then.
Yeah.
And then there was a lot of maintenance after you went over to somebody's house and sit on the couch.
Mm.
So it was a double maintenance job.
I love the show just because it's fascinating to me that you've had this transformation throughout your life, but then it's even more fascinating that you were able to find a bunch of other people who all you could basically plot their life stories along like a very similar curve.
So that was writing. That was actually being able to find. That was really Malcolm Spellman and Rashidi Harper, along with Obi. I can't say Obi's last name, but they were. It was like we had a vision, and I put it together. But they were actually the ones who actually helped go find and mush the stories together. Because I couldn't even put the stories together.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I knew the stories, but to actually like go in and see the correlation between the Long Beach Civic Center
right.
and put everybody there at the same time.
Uh-huh.
That was Malcolm, Obi, and I don't want to say our editor's name wrong.
I'm sure he'll understand.
Yeah, but that was a great team.
But so who were you thinking, or like, how did this particular idea come out? Because you said that when you walk into those meetings that they'll talk to you for 5 minutes and they'll have like 15 different ideas.
Yeah. So Jimmy Chris was the first one who actually came up with the idea to do a show, right? And he said he wanted my help. But he wanted to do a show about managers.
Mm.
And you know Steve Lobel, my partner.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Steve did a show on managers. It was like people doing shows on managers. Then it was like, let's do one on security and how security's life and behind the scenes. And so we ended up doing that. But I kind of wanted to just not stay away from that. Because at the time that he came to me, I wasn't really in music.
Mm.
I was, you know, my love and passion has always been film.
Right.
So I called Corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling Corrupt, bro, I'm going to come to your show. You know what I'm saying? Because I still was managing Corrupt. Mm. But I really was managing Veen Reigns and Tiny Lister. That was where I was really doing and doing shows.
Which, full disclosure, I just saw Baby Boy for the first time. So he's been ringing in my head ever since I seen that. And I know that's like criminal to have just seen it, but AD made me. AD got in my ear and told me I had to.
He told me he seen Vincent.
Mm, Melvin.
I mean, Melvin. What the
fuck? When he's doing the squat thing, fucking his mom, and he's doing the squat jump across the room.
My bro.
That was fire.
Yeah, you really just watched it. Yeah.
It's fresh in my mind, yeah.
But yeah, I was managing him, though. So I was managing.
And where did that come from? And how
it's
did
crazy
you get wrapped
how
up with him?
Two works with another one.
Okay.
He was a Nipsey fan.
Oh, wow.
I actually, he came through his daughter, who grew up with my son and went to Santa Monica High School, my oldest son.
Uh-huh.
And she was playing Nipsey. And she told Veen about Nipsey. Veen reached out to find Nipsey. And then from that, me and him established a relationship.
Uh-huh.
And so when I stopped managing Nipsey, I started managing him.
Right.
And so I was managing him. I was booking him for shows. So by me putting him in shows, they would ask me about Mike Epps. They would ask me about all these different people. So I was booking them and making money.
Mm.
You know, and so I was doing that for like, around about 10 years.
Really?
So I'm making money off, and you know what kind of money he was making off Mission Impossible.
Oh, wow.
So I'm making money off doing the shows with him, and then I'm getting credit in writing. So I ended up, one of my biggest writing was Force of Execution.
Right.
And it was with Veen Reigns, Danny Trejo, and Steven Seagal. And it's the first project Steven Seagal ever played a bad guy in.
Oh, wow.
And that was shot for like $7 million. And I acted in it, did the rewrites. I changed Veen's character all the way around to be Big U. He was really like playing like he was me coming from prison versus Steven Seagal in the drug business. And I kept him alive. They messed up and put his tattoos all in the wrong place. They wanted, you know, they wanted all this other stuff. You know, it was like a sin on him. But and then they was like, I remember when I was writing it, and they was like, well, he doesn't die. And I'm like, what? Am I dead?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, no, you're not. So, well, why should I kill myself?
But in these kind of movies, this guy is supposed to die. Usually.
No, only if you write the black guy dead.
Right.
You know what I mean? Uh-huh. The black guy not dying in this movie, bro.
Okay, I respect that. Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, we die in every movie, and usually in the beginning. And the black guy didn't die in the end.
Mm.
So I fought them on that, and they was like, oh, well, you're right, you're still here. I'm like, yeah. So if you see it, Veen doesn't die.
Right.
He just disappears. And then in mine, I get beat up. We all get beat up. We got to let the white guys win. Oh.
Is that how this is?
We had to let the white guys win.
What? Okay, this is what I want to know is what role, when you're involved in a film or a series now, what does your actual role look like? Like, obviously you're providing a lot of the inspiration, a lot of the ideas, but like, how much do you get wrapped up in the weeds of all the different things that have to happen for this shit to happen?
I write. I actually, like, it depends on what role I come in. Like, Kenya Ware is one of my homegirls, and I've been knowing her since she was a baby going to Westchester High School. She came up, let me show you how projects come to me. She came up with the idea to do a story on the Crips.
Uh-huh.
This was her idea, birthed out of her brain, out of her mind. And she put her own money in to get in the pilot shot, and she got a script written. So she came to me like, bro, help me with this. And she's always come to me to help her with certain projects. So now I'm coming in because of my connection and being the fact that I've already done projects to add relationships. So, like, I got a relationship with Benny Boone.
Right.
I called Benny. I need you as a director.
Well, and you probably shouldn't make a documentary about the Crips unless you got someone like you involved, right?
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense.
It's going to feel kind of bootleg otherwise, yeah. Right? Like, if not you, somebody, right. Someone credible.
Exactly. And I mean, it makes sense. Mm. And so, I mean, you know, the steps are getting it made. So now we come in, now I'm sitting down with the writers to get certain parts written correctly. And then we're going to go in and get her and get the writers linked up with actual dudes from the East Side who really know the story. But I think what people don't really get from me is the fact that I know how to tell a real story.
Mm.
So most of our people think a documentary is like a story. A documentary is only that. It only documents the truth or documents facts as we know them. You know, they can change. They can always change. But in telling a story, you need to be able to bring your characters to life. Mm. And a lot of my homeboys don't understand that. They think, I'm just going to do this, I'm going to tell it. But it's not that. It's a little bit more. It's a lot more than that. Like, I got to be able to bring in this moment, how you are, who your family is, what created you, what you think and how you feel.
Right.
And I got to do the same thing with me. I got to do that with multiple characters to actually tell a real story.
Right.
And it's not like telling a documentary.
Mm.
And even in telling a documentary,
you get to choose how you tell this story with the footage that you have.
Exactly. Yeah. Or you can tell a documentary based off just the footage.
Right.
You can tell one documentary off a picture or multiple pictures.
That's one thing I wanted to do is, how involved were you in getting the old video footage and photos and just all these amazing assets that really helped tell the story? And just, you know, it's such a window into like what LA was like 20, 30 years ago.
I mean,
you all up in that?
I was in it into a certain extent. I was only in it really, I was doing other projects. So as far as I had mine to tell my aesthetics, to get the aesthetics from who Big U was,
right.
I already had film going back to 1984.
Uh-huh.
And it's when you see me playing basketball. So I already was in the mindset of art. I've always wanted to tell stories.
Right.
So I've always kept footage, pictures, and videos. Man, my mother, when I came home, between my mother and my auntie, man, I had boxes of VCR tapes.
Mm.
Out of all of that footage, only two of them last. Survive.
Really? Holy shit.
Two of them. Man, I got Guiding Light, As the World Turned, Oprah Winfrey, bro, I damn near cried when I went back and looked at these tapes and seen what was taped over them. It has
the homies'
first
meeting,
a meeting, such and such get puts on the hood, all of these tapes that I had. I mean, going back from 1984, 85 with the big
Right.
Boom, boom, camera.
When it wasn't easy to just film everything.
Man, bro, all of it's taped over.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is there any way we can, like, go salvage it? Is it a way to go back and read? And I, but, so I've always wanted to tell stories. That's always been, like, you know, my
Question is, how come you decide, like, that's one thing I thought of while watching your shit, is that Big U could have easily done a podcast, could have done a YouTube channel, could have really, there's a lot of ways to tell stories, but it's interesting that you've chosen to, like, go in a much higher production value route and to make this content that is, like, presumably going to last a longer test of time because it is so well made.
It was timing. It was You know, like I said, we started this project 4 years ago when Jimmy Chris came to me, 4 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So I was working on a lot of other things, and it was pre-COVID. It was before Nipsey got killed. So the timing, it kind of hit at the right time.
Right.
We started it 2 years, and then it just sat dormant. In between that time, I'm still working on movies. I'm still writing stuff I'm trying to get produced. I'm still trying to get, these are short films I wanted to do what you done, and I'm still, at the time Nipsey called me, I started working with OSBS.
Uh-huh.
And I was traveling with them, so I signed OSBS, I signed Criticality, so I'm in music when Nipsey calls me to come back.
Mm.
And so right before Nipsey get killed, they called us about the project, Lightbox.
Right.
And they're like, we want to do this, we want to do that. And I was really reluctant to at that point I did it. Then I was thinking, like, nah, I'm back in music. Let me move like this. Then about a week later, Nip gets killed.
Mm.
So that kind of changed my attitude. And then about 3 weeks after that, they start this onslaught of Big U asking to do with it. So then I'm like, wait a minute. Let me tell my story. So then it just started growing and growing and growing and growing.
That got you on the path of thinking, my story needs to be out there and it needs to be clear, because it's obvious how easy it is for motherfuckers to just twist shit up and come up with some crazy ass narrative, you know?
And we signed a deal. We had already shot it. We signed a deal, like I said, about, I want to say a month after he passed. We signed a deal and then he passed, maybe two weeks to maybe a month. And I felt like, damn. I signed it, you know what I mean? So we went on forward, and I seen the first edit. We did some first edits. We went back and shot some stuff. And when I seen it, I was like, oh, shit, this is brilliant. Like, I want to do this. So then we stepped back in, and we have another meeting with Jonathan at Lightbox, and I said, I want to take it in this direction.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? But then I was looking at, what I was greatly influenced by was how people were being wronged.
Mm.
You know, how stories can get out there that's so far from the truth on how things happen, and they take on lives of their own.
Mm.
And you never really get to see how a person does. Like, people thinking I was somewhere in pain wishing I was in music.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, this shit was so far from the truth, because I'm making a lot of money doing shows and music. Which you knew, you know what I'm saying? But it would have to be in the hip-hop West Coast scene to know that I'm definitely not trying to get in music.
But it's so interesting, because on one hand, you're saying that you were perfectly happy just working on the music shit, but then...
No, I was only doing concerts.
Right.
I wasn't doing music. Mm. I was doing concerts and shows. Like, I did two concerts a year. I did a Developing Option show, and that was one of my main shows. Then I book artists.
Okay.
I could book Quavo. These are relationships. Like, I booked T.I. Anytime these guys, certain ones came to the West Coast, they went through me.
What kind of discount does an artist have to give up when Big U's the one booking them?
I don't give a discount.
Okay.
That's how you don't get a call back. I don't look for discounts. Mm. Only time I look for a discount for artists, if I'm giving them cash.
Mm.
That means I might bring them cash off the books.
I think most of the artists would be happy about that.
What? The reason why they call me. You know what I mean?
Oh, you mean the government doesn't get to take 50% of this?
Okay. So what most people was thinking and saying that I was pressing artists who getting off the plane is so far from the truth.
Mm.
So it only took an artist to deal with me to realize, oh, I'm keeping it 100.
But isn't it crazy how you could have this whole career and it's like, especially with you, just because of your history, any little bit of gangster shit will poison the well, and it'll become the narrative, and everything that you've done professionally gets kind of erased.
All of it.
Mm.
It's crazy how I got to be Big U for the rest of my life, shit that I was doing, I was 21, 22, 12, 15. But everybody else get to grow up.
Right.
Everybody else gets to say, I changed my life and I'm changed and I'm this and I'm
but
that.
That's how fascinated people are with gangster shit.
It is. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so you can either wallow in it or do like I did. I sat back for 2.5 years, watched the internet go, 2 years, and watched the internet go crazy while making my project. And right. It was the fuel for me to make something that was so phenomenal that people couldn't deny it. So in the room when we putting it together, I'm like, nah, this gotta be this, this gotta be that. So when you ask me how involved I was very involved.
Right.
Cause I wanted it to be something that nobody couldn't deny. Mm. You know what I mean? I needed it to be a piece of cinema that would talk not only for me, but for Haitian Jack, talk for Deb, talk for the people who were basically powerful but voiceless at the same time. You know what I mean? Like,
but they're two such different things of like doing shows or working with younger artists versus what you're doing when you make a documentary like this that basically like takes history and sort of seals it off and says this is what happened. Whereas on the other hand, when you're working with artists or doing shows, you're kind of making history or defining what the history will then be. It's such a different attitude, and I'm interested in the fact that you were able to sort of switch between them casually.
Well, I mean, you got to understand Malcolm Spellman is a true filmmaker, and then Rashidi Harper. And then you have me, who is the streets, music, hip hop, and entertainment, who is growing in points in the film industry. So I think together, the uniqueness of the team was phenomenal. And then Jimmy Chris coming and bringing in. So it was a team.
So you really see the value in just having that team around
you?
Yeah,
yeah. No,
that's
definitely
what's getting you where you're going?
Definitely. I mean, I had to actually go through things in life to actually make the story fit. And then me having the footage actually helps it come alive because you get the visual.
Once you see Big U just standing tall as fuck, muscular as fuck, Jerry Curl, just and the way people were talking about you, of like, as in you were just mad aggressive to everybody. And I was like, wow, this dude has gone through a massive transformation throughout his life, because you do not give out an ounce of like the vibe of like wanting to intimidate somebody. Like, you are who you are, but you're not making anybody feel bad or nothing like that, you know?
When I first ran into you, remember when I ran into you, what happened?
Let's do the flashback. You go, I heard you don't like me. And my reaction was something like, I don't know who told you that, but if I did not like you, I don't think I'd be telling anybody. If I didn't like you, I would have kept it to myself.
And it was crazy because most people think I'm running around on people and I'm like gangstering them. You got to pay me. And it was so funny because you was like, you also told me, you said, we was at T.I.'s video shoot. And I was with Thug and I was with OSBS.
Okay.
And we had just got the car, and you walked up to me, or somebody was with you, walked up to me and said,
Gunna was there too. That was the crazy shit. There's like Gunna just walked by at the same exact moment that I was meeting you. I was like, this is
weird.
And
he's like, hey, I want to interview you. I'm like, what's your name? And you're like, I'm Adam. And I'm like, Adam? He was like, I said, man, I heard you don't like me. And he was like, I don't know nothing about that.
We could actually play the clip just so that the world could see how awkward
it
was.
It?
Yeah, yeah, that's in this video.
You're lying.
No, I got it, yeah.
I didn't even know you filmed it.
We'll stick it in here so the world can experience it for themselves.
You really filmed it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No
I
shit.
I think so. Yeah, Trev filmed it, right?
No shit. I gotta see that.
You want to see it? We'll pull it up.
I was like having fun with you. But I mean, that's what most people don't understand, man. Like, I can bag. Like, bro, I used to come up. Also, a lot of my fights in high school was because I can bag. Like, I played a dozen because my mother was so fine. And she was dark and she looked good to me. So I was like, you ain't gonna find nothing wrong with my mama.
So
like,
you're saying that people, when they would roast you, that would just become the topic of conversation, that your mom looked good?
Everybody, bro. No, like my mom, like as she was like good looking.
Right.
So I had to be at a bag, bro. And my mother was a Scorpio. So she made sure we was dressed to the T. Like, she had this thing about, bro, I can love shoes. And my mother would not let me wear them mugs like more than so many times. I'm like, man, I just got them fit right. Like, so bagging is what we grew up doing.
Right.
And I mean, I have fun, man. I go out, I have fun. I do all kind of fun things.
But nowadays, they call it bullying, and you're not supposed to do it.
I'm still going to do it. I'm going to drop 50 on the motherfucker. Right. I mean, and when I mean 50, I mean, I'm going to drop 50 on you. You got to be, when you cut, like, if you're at the studio with us, you better be able to get down. Like, me and Smoke.
Right.
I mean, I ain't gonna get smoked right now. I ain't gonna talk about pale face right now while we on camera because he can't say nothing back.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But smoke it.
See, that's the era
but
that you
I'm
come
not
from.
Gonna do that. I'm not gonna bag on nobody on this camera because, you know, I'm not gonna do that.
That's bullying,
You know what I'm saying?
But okay, there's a big difference. I feel like the old generation or the new generation is you're in the studio, everybody's staring at their phone. The old generation is we don't got phones, so we're going to fuck with each other. We're going to talk. We're going to mess with each other. We're going to get into all kinds of reindeer games and hijinks. And it's good that you still epitomize that, I think.
I do. I mean, you know, I grew up in the era like we're going to have fun. Then somebody going to call us and tell us something happening on Crenshaw or something happening somewhere. We pulling up. We got the guns. We're going to go take care of that.
Right.
Then we coming right back. We having fun till somebody get caught.
Right.
Now, I mean, that's how we grew up.
Mm.
We really grew up from bagging in a room and then, like, we get a phone call, a page.
Mm.
And now it's on, like, that quick. We go from that quick to that quick.
But, okay, you, as someone who's changed your life so much, you don't talk about that like it's this horrible memory that has scarred you. You seem like you kind of, you appreciate your history even if you are not living such a
grew
way,
up
right?
doing. It was what we grew up doing. And like, it was, like, for instance, right? My mother never knew what Crips and Bloods was.
Mm.
She used to buy me blue rags. She had no clue.
Right.
Right. My mother's from the south of Mississippi. And so when they moved out here, you know, I was born out here. They had no clue what was about to come.
Mm.
It's this generation that knows what Crips and Bloods is, you know, and my mother them didn't have a clue. I could be sagging, and my mother would only see sagging as just like, why you don't got a belt on?
Mm.
You know what I mean? This generation knows what it is.
Right.
And it's different, you know, like knowing. But my mom, I don't have no tattoos. Mm. I don't smoke. I don't drink. I really was like a mama's boy.
Right.
Like my mother said, she didn't want me to get high. I didn't do it. She didn't want me to drink. I didn't do it.
And all the peer pressure over the years didn't really do nothing?
I love my mother, man. It was me and my mother, like,
did anyone let you know that, like, drinking and smoking feels good? And
I did. I got high before.
You just didn't really love it?
I tried it, but you know what I'm saying? Like, my mother was just, like, a major influence in my brain. Like, are you a coward? You're going to go out the house and you're gonna let these people tell you what to do. She didn't know nothing about gangbanging, so she didn't have this thing about don't gangbang, don't do
this. Oh, she didn't tell you don't shoot someone. But she did tell you don't smoke and drink.
She didn't know what it was until I was actually in jail fighting so many cases. It was like,
right,
you know, and she was like, they're saying you're a monster. And I'm like, Mom, I don't believe none of that.
Right. Dude, I mean, I just wonder, like, how you perceive all this shit these days. Because, like, just for example, to take it outside of the L.A. world and shit, like in Jacksonville right now, there's a couple of rap crews. Bro, there's like a 10 plus people dead on each side of it from this like gang war that they got going. And it's express suit songs too. And one of the artists, Young E Nace, just put out this song where he's just literally the whole song is making fun of the other side's dead homies. And it's like,
see, that's ridiculous.
I can't believe it. Like that this shit is still happening. And I just wonder, what's your perspective on this kind of shit?
Well, I think certain things shouldn't be said out.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Even when we did this documentary, people try to say that we said, no, we didn't. We talked about things that can't nobody be charged for.
Mm.
We purposely made sure and we looked at things and we didn't say things. But you could get where we coming from.
Right.
We gave you the authenticity of who we were. You know what I mean? But I feel like where we are in hip hop, I don't down people. I don't want to down our young artists because I think they're hella talented.
Mm.
But it's more serious than it was back then because it used to be beefs back in the days.
Right.
You had LL Cool J versus Kumo D. You had this person, and they were fights. But what happens today is because of the drug use and because these dudes are so off the chain, you don't never know what these dudes are about to do.
Mm.
I don't even think they know what they're about to do until they wake up in a cell a month later.
Mm.
And the drugs have worn off, the psychosis has worn off, and they realize, I'm like, I did what?
Right.
Some of them don't even realize they got the damn tattoos they have on their face. So it's kind of hard to, you know what I mean, to realize it. But, you know, I remember I read one time where Russell Simmons said he was high. He was so high, he don't even remember 10 years of, he don't even remember the 80s or the 90s. You remember something like that?
I mean, all that coke and shit will really do something to you.
But
you
know? These dudes are not just using coke now. Mm. They're using
those opiates. If you want to erase your memory, that'll do it. Yeah.
And so we're in a different place in hip hop, but I feel like the kids got it, but our generation was more of sellers. This generation is users.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Also, like, you could get into a scrap with someone. You probably have hundreds of fights that, like, four people saw. And now it's like if someone gets beat up, millions of people immediately know.
Yeah.
If somebody's gang gets clowned, some any kind of disrespect, it's just immediate content. Mm-hmm. So it's like you can kind of understand why these beefs just sort of spiral out of control, whereas it might have been more isolated.
No, I can't understand it because somebody got to be a man at some point and say they was wrong. Mm. Like as far as Quando Rondo. I was wrong for saying it, but he was wrong for not reaching to his homeboy. And then on the same line that I reached out to you, you reached back out to me on it.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? But I apologize to my homeboy. You know what I'm saying? Because that's where it starts and stops. Somebody got to apologize. They was wrong. I was wrong.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? But I'm a man. I can admit that I'm wrong. I can say, you know what I'm saying? Like, if I make a mistake, my nigga, I'm going to admit that I made a mistake. I ain't going to carry it past that.
Right.
But I had to grow to that, though. It was at one point when I was younger, it would have been like, fuck you, so what I said that I did that.
Mm.
You understand what I'm saying? But I feel like the kids have to get to that. And I don't want to call them kids because I don't want nobody feeling like I'm offending them by calling them a kid either.
Right.
But we have to get to that point in our existence to realize where we are in hip hop. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But I want to be an example to hip hop also.
Right.
And when I'm wrong, admit that I'm wrong. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I don't want to be, you know, because I'm a go when I'm supposed to go.
Right.
Like if it's a beef, even to this day at 54, and it's a serious one, I'm gonna pull up and I'm gonna do what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
But if I can avoid it, I'm gonna be a man and avoid it. You know what I mean?
And I thought that situation was pretty interesting just because Quando Rondo is so young, and it's like I don't see you really seeing yourself in the same game that he's in. Like, you've learned all the lessons that he's still going through at this point in his life. But when you're
a good kid too.
But when you see him, I saw a quote from you where you said, like, this guy's claiming my neighborhood. How much does that make you feel like you owe him a conversation or owe him taking it seriously when it is such a global thing?
I do, because no matter what, I got to be the older one.
Mm.
So that's why I got to apologize. You know what I'm saying? Because at some point, I got to be the older one. He gets to still be the kid.
Mm.
He still gets to be the young one. But at some point, if I fail to be the older person and the bigger person, then I'm really failing the whole generation.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I'm failing myself. I ain't losing no points. I don't feel like I'm losing no points by showing my little homeboy or whoever else respect.
Mm.
And then I'm supposed to be able to sit him down and tell him where he wrong at.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's just being a man. Because I got kids. I want my kids to know right from wrong. Mm. I'm not going to ride with just anybody when they just right or wrong. I don't do that. You know what I mean? That would continue a cycle of ignorance.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I tell my homeboys, no, we're going to be right. I want to be right.
Right.
I'm not riding with a nigga right or wrong. Because if I do, and that comes from being on prison yards, niggas right or wrong, and then you going to the hole. Or that comes from you catching a case. Now you done fucked your life off and you knew your homeboy was wrong.
Right.
Why don't you check him in the beginning?
Mm.
You know what I mean? Or check myself. You know what I mean? And then because I know when it's right and I'm right, I'm going to tear this shit up.
Because the people who are the leaders of the community, you just can't continue to have that mind state of like, oh, you're my boy, so I'm riding with you no matter what. That's not going to last that long, that mentality.
Well, it is going to last that long because that's the ignorance we see right now. And it's not just hip-hop.
Mm.
It's in America. It's in American politics. Look
sure.
at what just happened. Look at just what happened at the U.S. Capitol.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Now you got all the Republicans trying to justify the biggest wrong in U.S. history.
Mm.
The biggest wrong in U.S. history.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Trying to minimize it, make it seem like it exactly. wasn't that big a deal, like we didn't all
but
live through it.
But you got five people die.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And who's accountable for that?
Mm.
You got George Floyd being killed publicly on television, in camera.
Mm.
And they're trying to say that the crowd killed him. Mm-hmm. A crowd made this man do what he did.
Right.
And so it's not just hip hop. And when we report on hip hop, we only tend to report that it's the bad in hip hop. But it's a lot of great in hip hop. And I do interviews and I try to let people who are interviewing me realize that if we only ask me about the Quando Rondos, but not we never talk about the Kendrick Lamars. Mm-hmm. We never talk about the OSBSs, the Criticality. We never talk about what's my man, Jordan Lucas. We don't ever talk about the cast is doing something positive, and we only focus on the negative. That's what hip hop is gonna look like. Mm. Hip hop is only gonna look like it's a negative force, but we don't even talk about the dudes who are great artists, who are going platinum, who are selling and really, you know, making our culture look good. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, we got a lot of artists, man. We got more artists that's doing good than we have that's doing bad.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Definitely.
And so, but we only see interviews on that. You know, that's all we hear about is the carnage.
Yeah, I know. A lot of times you'll see an interview and you can just like feel this contentious relationship where the interviewer just wants to only ask about this shit that's going to agitate because they know it's going to get views. And the rapper is not so stupid that they don't realize what's happening. They understand and they don't want to do it. And it's a terrible like way to base a conversation. I love when I do an interview like where I don't know what the fuck to title it because we're just talking about whatever.
Right.
Yeah. As somebody who lived through the LA riots, how did you feel?
No. What,
you weren't around for
I
that.
I was gone.
You were gone. You were away
I
for
left.
That. Okay.
I was actually in the county jail to riot the day the riot started, and I actually went to the hole for a riot that was in the county jail.
Oh wow! So you found out about it after more so?
I think R started before or started early that day inside the county jail, and then there started at night.
Right. What's your perspective on the most recent protests and the at times turned violent last year? Like, what was your perspective on that happening and what that meant to the community?
I think I was vocal, man. I'm not a marcher. Mm. I don't see myself marching. I don't know what it does and what it will do, but I support the people that do march. Mm-hmm. I just feel like when it's my time, I'm gonna go. Mm. I'm going to go the same way I've been going. So when that call come, feast be a lie, I'm going to go. And, you know, I'm going to be looking for ways to make my impact. Mm. And hopefully my kids and my people are going to make their impact the way they're supposed to. But I don't see myself marching and letting nobody do nothing to me freely. Mm.
You think we're about to have another round of protests when the George Floyd verdict comes back?
Nah, I don't think so, because I think they're going to do the right thing. Mm. I mean, if we haven't reached that point in our history with all the things that's happening around in this country, then shame on us. Mm.
You know. Yeah, but I mean, if they don't make the right decision, I don't know. I'm a little worried about what might happen after that.
I'm not worried about it. I mean, this country up until we seen what just happened at the Capitol, the infrastructure of this country won't be imploded by people of color. Mm. You know what I mean? And the anger of people of color. It's not built like that. Mm. The only way this country this rock would be changed, it would be from people that look like you or that come from your background, because you guys would have to change it. You would have to change it for the plight of people my color and other people dark and brown, and you guys would have to change it for us to be really ever become a great nation, fair for everybody else. It can't come from us. It won't come from us.
Well, that's a good question. What makes a good white ally in the struggle or in hip-hop or in your world?
What makes a good one?
Yeah, like what do you expect from a white person that's involved in your culture or community or wants to make things better?
Man, I mean, just a constant fight, because, you know, when I wake up every morning, I'm fighting. Somebody who understands it, who understands that there is a fight. I could talk to Steve sometime, and sometimes Steve get in, sometimes Steve don't. Mm. You know what I'm saying? You got friends that's black from your side that feel like you get it sometime and feel like you don't get it sometime. Mm. And that's just natural. I studied theology while I was gone. You know, I majored in theology. So I see how cultures change, and I've seen how nations were built and how they topple when the other nations are built, literally on top of other grounds the other nations' cities were built on. And it's always people who need another people to make them strong. And because this is a white nation, you know, it would take a white mindset to actually get it to where it should be fair for other people. Mm. And then you got a people who are stronger who don't want to see the values of this nation change, who who see the value of being a white power and a dominant power in the world.
Mm.
So if you ask somebody to say give that up and become even keel after they have built something that's considered to be the greatest nation in the world, they're not gonna do that easily.
No, people don't tend to give up power easily.
No, they're not gonna do that easily. You know what I mean? And I've been other places. I've been to other countries. I've seen how those countries and how they live, and I've come back to this country and I've seen how we live.
Mm.
And so it's a give and a take, and it's a hatred when you see how we take so much from other places, but we still benefit from it.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
I mean, it's pretty crazy. I remember going to England and, just being around all them and starting to realize, and this is probably 10 years ago, but starting to realize, like, wow, they have such different ideas about racism than we do. And actually, I have a friend, Gabe Brooks, who actually was murdered a couple years ago, and he's a black guy from L.A., and one of my friends from England said to me, he's like, why does Gabe feel like he's had something inherently like bad done to him by his government? And I'm like, you know about slavery, right? And he's like, it made no sense to him that American black people could feel that way. And to me, it's such a default. Like, of course they feel that way. And that just like really kind of opened my eyes to like, well, there are a lot of black people in London, but you guys don't even view this shit the same way that we do. And
well, because they were removed from it before we were.
Mm.
So their distance is a lot farther than ours.
Mm.
You know what I mean? The 1500s, they started moving away from it. And then they started moving away from the teachings of it. Ours is so rooted in religion that people don't get it. Because we were, slavery in this country was reinforced through religion.
Mm.
And everybody adopted the Christian religion. And it enforced it. Where in other countries, religion wasn't used as a tool to indoctrinate into other countries. So that philosophy trains when you get to this country.
Mm.
And so they don't actually feel it like we feel it. And they don't actually have it rooted in them. You know what I mean? So they don't actually see, they don't even have almost the same teachings that we have.
Right.
When it comes to religion.
Yeah, it makes you realize that America has like its own very specific racial history to deal with that, you know, but this takes place everywhere around the world. When I'm watching documentaries about different countries where there isn't even really that much of like a racial breakdown, like black and white people look very different, but you know, I'm watching documentaries about shit that's going on in other countries where they got tribes going to war. They look exactly the same, but you know, they find something to hate each other over.
They've always been that throughout history. And so I do a lot of talking because I do the gang intervention. So I speak at a lot of schools and they talk about the tribalism at the Crips and Blood, where there's never been a time in history where man didn't have a conflict.
Mm.
Going back to Adam and Eve, and if you accept that story, you go back to Cain and Abel, if you accept that story to be factual. But there's always been conflict. There's always been conflict between brothers and sisters. And some of those have come to death and led to death, so why wouldn't we think that two fractions or people would not have a common agreement or have a misunderstanding?
But
that's unrealistic. But the violence of it doesn't have to reach
exactly
the level that it is at.
Mm.
So that's the problem. We have let the violence reach too high of a level.
Right.
You know what I mean? And on a lot of things, we celebrate the violence. And I used to tell people all the time when I was young, and in even today's time, when you talk about gangs, it's almost always the most ignorant person of the gang who's celebrated the most. The one who, if somebody pull over the gun, they're going to represent the hood, or you're going to represent, so it's that.
Yeah.
And not the most intelligent person.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you have to take years of being successful and weeding through to show your intelligence before people really say, oh yeah, we're gonna follow him.
Hmm.
But so, other than that, they wanna follow LeBron.
The gangs in LA is inevitable, but what you're saying is that the animosity and the violence doesn't have to be the level that it's at now or that it's been in the past. How much do you feel like you're responsible for?
A lot of it. I feel like
intervening as much as possible.
I feel like, I do a lot of intervening, but I feel like R. Piece of Rock that we consider to be Crenshaw has a lot to do with a lot of it. And so when I came out with Nipsey and we came out, I felt like I wanted to be a conduit to giving people a way to get to something positive, showing that we can move, be together, and function together without, you know, hating each other. So the way I move, and even when I came home in 2004 and established a relationship with Suge, that was my intentions, you know, to show people that we can move together. My relationship with Wack and Wacko, to show that red and blue doesn't have to always, you know, be at beef, be at odds. I try to show by example, you know what I mean, and dealing with kids and helping that. I feel like it's very important for us because of our part of Rock Crenshaw. We people look at us differently because of the successes we've had. So
that is true, because there's a lot of hoods in LA even that there's never been a big success story from there. So like you as somebody that is seeing all this and having so much more, I mean, it's easy to take it for granted just having seen the world, having met all these important ass people. You know, it's easy to forget that a lot of people in the neighborhoods ain't been exposed to nothing.
Right. I tell my artists that, I tell my homeboys that, I try to instill that in my sons, that it's somebody in Mississippi who would die to meet Tip, who would die to meet Gunna, Luda, and all the different people you have had the pleasure of just knowing and just greeting and not realizing the situation that I have tried to put you guys in. So, I sometime even when you are in our area, because it's so normal, it can hurt a person. It can hurt that drive. It can hurt that drive where they like, shit, I just did a song with E-40. I just did a song with Gunna. I just did a song with this person.
Right.
And then you have that person who's coming from an area where they will never meet these people. You know what I mean? And they have more of a fight and more of an energy towards being great.
Definitely. About the gang intervention shit, how do you balance the fact that the mission that you're on there is really important, along with the fact that, you know, you love where you're from, you love the culture that you come from?
Have to be, man. You have to. It's like with gang intervention, how it really works is you have to have a license to operate. You have to be trusted enough to know that you can talk to your homeboys and other dudes can talk to their homeboys. It's not a snitching factor because that's not a part of it. It's just about pulling back and letting the homies know, look, hold up before we do this, or putting in program. Like my biggest thing is my sports program through the city. So we set those up to deal with the kids. And shouts out Big Snoop Dogg for the SYFL. And my brother Wadu, you know what I mean? So it's just about really trying to be an outlet for kids to have a way to move. You know what I mean? And being an example. Like, I'm a living example. I'm a living example. And reason why I didn't change my name and start calling myself Eugene or Hannibal or whatever, and I wanted to call myself Big U because I wanted young people to understand it wasn't in the name. It was in the decisions I make. You know what I mean? Like, I get up in the morning, my day starts, I get up in the morning, I go work out. Then I might, if I'm doing martial arts, I'm going with weights and what I'm doing. Then after that, I go and I start reading. And from there, I'm reading and writing. Then I'm doing whatever business I'm doing, and I get to the kids and I coach. And after the kids, I go back into music. So my music time is really like from 9 p.m. all the way to like 1 or 2. And I get home, or maybe when I get home, and I'm usually sleeping in the studio while they making the music. And I'm waking up, what did you do? And you know what I'm saying?
Are they not allowed to splash you with the water like Chief Keef?
Hell no, because I can still, I mean, listen, I got about 18 more months of this fighting shit.
Look, right. You know, oh, really?
About 18 more months it is over after that.
When's the last time you scrapped with somebody?
Shit. 3 weeks ago, we spar every day. You know I spar.
Okay, but I mean like rough somebody. Rough somebody, fight.
Man, I don't know. I ain't talk about that. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to fight with nobody, bro. This shit'll hurt. You know what I'm saying? At my age, you like, this shit'll hurt. Like, it'll really like hurt like for months.
Bro,
like,
that shit blew my mind seeing you just outside the fucking roller rink, and it was just normal that just fades all day.
Oh, yes, I used to go.
That's crazy.
I really used to go. It's like, it really used to go like that, though. Like, dudes would come from everywhere. Mm. Like, oh, I want to squab with Big U. You know what I mean?
For real. Yeah. And you were just, let's go.
You can't turn the fade down. Yeah. You pulled up.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
You never met anybody that was real competition around that time?
Nope, not that time. Because, I mean, I was kind of cheating.
How so?
Meaning that I trained to fight.
Oh, okay. That's so cheating.
Right. You know, if I'm trained, I ran, I exercised.
Right.
And my whole family did martial arts. So when we met and got together, it'd be a family thing. Uh-huh. Like, we have our own school.
Do you think you would be a UFC fighter if you...
I would have definitely been a UFC fighter. Right. A good one. Because like I boxed already. I grew up boxing, and I grew up doing martial arts, and I started wrestling at Pomona High School when I went there for 1 year.
That would have been amazing.
Yeah. You know what I mean? But I'm too old and shot up too many times, knee injuries. Them dudes will kick my ass. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You can't compete against the 20-year-olds these days or whatever.
I'm not even going to try. I'm going to turn that fade down.
I'd like to see that, though. Big U in the UFC heavyweight division.
He said whack. You want to see whack fight. You already say whack.
Would whack be in the heavyweight division? Can we get a weight?
Say whack, you want to see whack?
That's my subconscious mind wants to see him in there, too.
Whack? Whack going to be bad as you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, one more question, though, about before we bring your artists in. Are you, at times, it feels like you kind of have, like, a conflicted relationship with your own identity in the sense that, like, you the legend of Big U is almost bigger than Big U the man, and you're able to sometimes go to a club and say, I'm here with Big U, and that just works.
Yeah. Oh, it works.
Yeah.
Oh, real talk.
But when you are doing film, usually it's not about you, but then with, like, this new series, it's like you're talking about your past, you're showing video and photos of your past. Is there part of you that wants to sort of get past your prior identity?
Well, here it goes. Like, okay, I think my wife is more Big U than I am.
I mean, your wife is the biggest gangster I've ever seen for holding you down in prison when I'm watching that shit. I'm like, how is that even possible, bro?
No, my wife is more gangster than anybody I know because she really the Big U.
Right.
But to me, I feel like when you read and you study and you read as much as I have and study as much as I have, you tend to kind of accept, like, your being. Like, I like the things that I'm not good at. Like, I can't spell worth a shit.
Mm.
Like, I can't spell worth a shit. And anybody who follows me on Instagram knows that, right? But it's like when you try not to take yourself so serious, you know, you can laugh at yourself and you can do certain things. But I'm still Big U, you know what I mean? I still want to be able to be like the father, the grandfather, but still, you know, let me tell you, when I say it's coming, it's coming. And that should be a man. You know what I mean? Like, I don't got to be Big U every single day. Like really, like, fuck Big U. Like, keep it 100. Like, I'm a man. I'm a man. I pay bills. I got to figure out how to hustle every single day. My bills monthly amass over almost 30. You know what I mean? Like, these niggas is worried about $5,000-$6,000. Like, what the, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I got real bills. And then I had to really become a man at some point in my life. And that means leaving this childish thing alone. And that means going past being this average, everyday gangbanger. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you got to be a man. I bought my wife a brand new car, $170,000. You know what I'm saying? We live in houses. I buy property. I own multiple pieces of property. You know what I mean? So who could be Big U? Who could walk around and deal with the foolishness? When people say stuff to me on the internet, social media, I'm thinking like, nigga, you probably don't even have a car. Like, you definitely don't own as many pieces of property as I do, because if you did, you wouldn't be sitting on here saying something to a grown-ass man who got more bills than you've ever seen.
Right.
So I go block. Shift. Block. And that's about being a man. I talk to young people all the time about responsibilities.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know what it feels like. You remember how you started. You remember how you started with an idea to do No Jumper, and somebody said this, and somebody said this, and do this. Then you realize, God damn, I used to be over here paying the bill over here. Now I'm over here paying the bill over here. Lights, gas, car notes. Some of these dudes don't have none of that.
Mm.
I'm not finna give a nigga who don't got no bills, no energy.
Mm.
I'm not finna do that.
Right.
You know what I mean? But if the situation amounts itself, I got to. What do I want to build? I want to make Crenshaw and the dudes from Crenshaw the number one trending for positive cycle group of men on planet Earth.
Oh, yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm selfish in that way. I'm selfish in wanting to see all my artists be successful, all my homeboys, Unique Music, All Money In, whatever goes in, I want to see, because we from the Crenshaw district.
Right.
And anybody in all over the world, that don't make me hate nobody else. That just make me work harder for our crew. And when I talk to youngs, I'm like, look, me, you have an obligation to be great.
Right.
What was Nip? Working to be great. What am I? Working to be great. Oh, you a part of this? You want to be a part of this? You got to work to be great.
Mm.
We ain't no niggas standing on the corner smoking and drinking, and that ain't me.
Right.
I'm not finna be on no corner with no eight ball, bro. Talking about I run the block.
Right.
I'm finna extend the block. I'm gonna extend the block, extend the wealth, create ideas, continue to motivate people to be great, continue to do documentaries and movies and say, okay, the big homie did that.
Mm.
Now I gotta follow it. You know what I mean? That's exactly what we're doing.
A lot of times people, by the time they reach your approximate age, they've kind of lost the spark. It feels like yours might be brighter than ever. Like, oh, you're more motivated than ever.
Oh, I am.
There's no extent to which you're kind of like, well, I feel pretty successful, so I can just relax a little bit.
Nah, I don't got the money yet. Mm. I ain't going to stop anyway. It don't even matter.
Right. Because what else are you going to do?
Because what am I going to do? I don't have no habits.
Yeah.
I don't smoke. I don't drink. I don't hang out. The only time I go to the club is if I'm like required to go, or I don't do that. I pretty much just sit at home and play Call of Duty Call of Duty. I just got good at 2K.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm playing.
You playing for
money?
I know
you're not saying nothing. Smoke.
The filmer, it seems like he wants to smoke.
Yeah. So you know what I mean? I really just sit at home, bro. Like, if I'm not writing, I'm sitting at home. I got two movie projects, I can't say their names, that we're looking at.
Mm.
And one of them I had to write Big U into it, so it's a really good one. And I wrote it, it's like a Southern story. It's like the South meets the West and the East, and it's like.
But you wrote Big U into it, as in you're gonna have somebody play you, or you're gonna have a little role?
Yeah, no, I'm not gonna be, somebody gonna be me.
Do you have no interest in being on camera in that regard?
Nah, I mean, you know, I do some sneaky in every now and then, because right. I had fun. Bro, one of the best times in my life was acting, was doing that with Veen.
Right.
Was doing that role. Bro, because when you higher up in the script, like, you got to be I was number 9 in the script.
Uh-huh.
So they treated me with the utmost respect.
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
No,
bro, your hand don't even touch a doorknob.
Wow, really?
They got the car picking you up. They got the food. They giving you a daily per diem. Mm. And they still giving you a check.
Right.
No, do you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're getting the daily per diem.
Free food.
Free. No, you're getting
food money.
You're getting more money for food, but they still feeding you.
Oh, yeah, right. The per diem and the buffet.
You get the buffet, the per diem, hot and food, and you get to sit there and wait. You in the trailer. You got your own trailer with your name on it, with your 13 sets of the same clothes that you wearing that day. You know? But yeah. That shit is awesome, man. Like, if you've never acted before, I'm looking at the camera to tell you, you really want to do it. You want to get high up in there.
Right. But is it like you have to leave your house and your family life for like a couple months at times? That sounds pretty wild.
Yeah, like I filmed in New Mexico. We was there for a month. We filmed in the Dominican Republic. We was there for a month. It was torturous.
Really? Just being away?
You know what I'm saying? But, hey, you know, I filmed in San Diego. I filmed a couple of different places. But I like to go away and film. You know what I'm saying? And I'm trying to get Veen to get me, since he over there and, you know, filming Mission Impossible, bro, won't give me the ticket, bro.
Right.
For sure.
You know, it's your, no, you know your daily per diem can take care of me.
Mm, for know, sure.
Probably getting $1,000 a day to eat.
Yeah, bang. Get me out there, too. Okay, so when did you, or what is your thought process on all these artists that you have now that you're working with, and how do you contribute positively to everything that they have going on? And like, are you, in to some extent, you're still kind of waiting for them to like really make their big premiere?
To be honest with you, the wait was over once I dropped the documentary. I kind of like, when I dropped the documentary, our name will be hot again. They'll be fucking with us, and let's go. Let's have projects ready. Let's go in. And like I said, I wasn't really in music until Nip called me.
Right.
So you can see where Nip and OSBS was really vibing. And then I found Critic. I knew Critic before that, when the first time before I got back out of music. And so with Critic and OSBS, then there's What's Up Mickey.
Right.
Like, I got a lot of plans for What's Up Mickey because he's a comedian. Mm. So I'm centering the whole show around him, and I'm writing it because he's hella talented, and he has a bunch of different characters.
Mm.
But like I said, the people I'm dealing with now are really just two, but I'm starting developing, I'm starting Delish Entertainment. I'm starting Unique Music Distribution.
Right.
So with the distribution, we're able to put out all artists. And they're not signing to Unique Music. It's just a distribution like DistroKid, Empire. And we actually can do labels, get label imprints to put out their music. So
that's what's up.
We're doing that. I'm looking at, I'm doing a situation with, I better not say, I got a label situation that's happening with, for my company, with another label. But it's fun right now. Like right now it's fun. And I dropped two songs. We got Criticality as a song with E-40.
Uh-huh.
That's actually doing good. You know what I mean? He gonna come on and talk about that. Then we just dropped a song, Free Hood Rich, with with one of the members of OSBS, that's Five. And so that song is really doing good. So one of them is a Western song, and one of them is one of them can go in the West. That's the E-40. We're setting up a West Coast radio run, and then the South would be Free Hood Rich with OSBS Freezy.
Okay.
Feezy. You know what I'm saying?
I got you.
You know.
That's what's up.
You gonna like that video.
I'm fucking with it already. All right, we're gonna get the other mic set up real quick and get these guys on.
Got that blood.
All right, so Big U, introduce us to your artist here.
Okay, this is Criticality.
What up?
The how vocals.
Okay.
This Feezy, OSB Feezy. Smoke.
He don't know me that well, you feel me?
He's a rock. He does rock music now.
So how did you guys all end up linking up with this guy? And what was your first impression, I guess?
Crenshaw. We family. We really all family, but you know. We all from Crenshaw.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, this is my real blood.
That's okay.
And I'm real close to him and his oldest son. We all like this.
Uh-huh. Everybody from the district.
So it's all natural.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And so what made you think that they had the potential that you wanted to work with them?
Well, when I started back doing music, when Nippy called me to do music, and then we went to New York, and then we was talking, and he was asking me to come back and manage him, I started looking for other artists, too, because I pretty much know Nip was already there. It wasn't no refining Nip. It was just wait, feed the calls, and, you know, book the shows, and that was done. So I'm like, shit, I'm in the studio. I went in the studio with Nip. And we recorded for like 5 days on his album. And I was in there recording and fucking with him. And you'll see it when I posted. We was in there when the Victory Lab was coming out. And so we was in there talking crazy. And I'm talking about, let me give me some new artists. And so that's when I started going. I went to my homeboy studio, Vay. He had a studio out in the valley that was, what was that street was that studio on?
I was on like
Saticoy or something like that.
Lancashire,
because it was in the same alley with Atlantic Studios, and
yeah.
Five started coming up to you. How did you know I was even?
I was popping up on all bro sessions.
Mm-hmm.
I
knew bro. Just on it.
Once
on.
He was getting back in music, I'm like, I'm
gonna just be around until he realizes I'm the shit.
Yeah. Was you out yet?
Yeah, I had just got
he
out.
Probably just been out 2 months.
Just got out like 2 months. Yeah.
Like two months. You know, Nip already the homie. I gave Nip a song like 15 years ago, like a trash ass song. He still showed love. Like, yeah, nigga, you still rap. I'm like, all right, for sure.
I heard a lot of stories from people basically saying that like Nip was supportive of my shitty ass music early in my career.
No, real talk, bro. Yeah. He gonna motivate you for sure.
Well, how could when I say the shit be shit, y'all be?
Cause Nip say it a different way.
That's real.
Yeah, yeah.
I do it. You call it bullying.
Wait. Be like, man, this some bullshit. You know, Nip gonna be like, yeah, bro. Just you know. Be a little louder. You know? So,
that's dope. For sure. Okay, how'd you guys tap in?
Yeah, like, really, Uncle's looking for talent. Mm. So, one of my peoples that I know, they was like, you know, hey, Big, you looking for talent. And I must have burned, like, every CD I could find with every song I could find. Mm. Like, and I went up to the studio when he was looking for the talent and then played the music and he liked the music. And ever since then, he been, you know, mentoring and cultivating me to work on music and make music just like me and Five, you know what I mean? We used to, he used to let me go to a studio on 43rd, make music, don't charge us, like, just really help our music career, so.
He didn't charge you?
That's how I met him. No, he charged you? He charged you? Well, you know what I mean? But he really motivated us to, like, really do the music,
right.
So.
Mm-hmm. What was your impression of him?
He's a spitter.
Really?
I couldn't understand the word these niggas are saying. He spits. Like, he really, like.
You're a real lyrical nigga.
He lyrical. Like, yeah. He spits. Like, he can go in a room with a Common, all the motherfuckers who can really, like, rap. That's his style. Like, he had one song, the old song that me and Hop, like, dedicated to the East.
Yeah, so I did a mixtape called Crack to the Future.
Mm.
And I did, I took the Biggie beat and I was like, if I got to choose a coast, I got to choose the West. Mm. I live out there, so you know what I mean? And flipped it. I really did it before Game Man did it with Keisha Cole, but yeah, they liked it.
That shit was so
hard.
Like, so he really spits.
Right.
And then they style was more like the South, what's out right now.
Right.
You know what I mean? So he was more mine, what I was on.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And then, We had put out a couple of projects. Then Sandman got killed, and I was like, I'm through with this music shit.
Rest in peace, Sandman. You know what I'm saying?
Rest in peace, Sandman.
It kind of was like a blow for all of us. Like, man, fuck this music shit, man.
Yeah, and I backed up, and then like I said, I didn't get back into it until Nip called me, and so then they came out of nowhere. This dude bum rushed the studio. Mm. I actually was dealing with my little homeboy RS, and I was finna sign RS and his little brother, who's the brother of one of the artists from NSYNC, right? I mean, not NSYNC, but
that little, I know what you're talking about, that little group,
Mindless Behavior, his brother. And these dudes, I had got a beat from, who that beat came from? Marley Marl. I got a beat that came from Marley Marl, and they made the hook. It was, what was the name of that song? Y'all first song.
What's the name of the smoke? What's the name of that
bitches,
shit?
Bitches, something about.
Bitches ain't shit,
everybody but hoes.
No. Nah. Everybody baby mama.
Everybody baby mama.
For real.
That's what it just sort of. So I go to sleep like I normally do. I'm sleeping in the studio. I wake up, these dudes done the hook. Fucking everybody's baby mama. I don't know if you can cuss on here, can you?
Go crazy.
But the song was called Fucking Everybody's Baby Mama.
Right.
And so. When I woke up, I'm like, damn, that hook is crazy.
Right.
But it was supposed to be they just doing the hook and then the feature, and it ended up being like, nah, we're going to just take RS off of it because RS then went to jail a week later. Mm. And I'm like, y'all just do it. And that's really what started the relationship with me and them. Mm. And Smoke was really kind of like the anal one out to the prima donna.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I need to $1 billion to sign.
Hey, man.
Respect for spacing that out so much and just assuming we would hang along for it, because I was like, hey, is he still talking or did he finish the
that
sentence?
That was smoke, though. You got to understand, bro. We met in my office. This shit was so ominous. He has this other dude who's his partner. He like, what was the dude? Nah, you don't want to say, yeah, say his name. He's like, yeah. I'm from the cartel family.
Oh my God! You hit him with the cartel, hey, talk. Man, all right.
His
partner. I know you with the Chris, but I'm with the cartel,
his
buddy.
Partner, bro. Like, listen, we in my office, and I'm like,
you didn't want to fuck with my partner
for real. Like, all right.
We gonna work this fast. But,
like, what the fuck are we doing here, bro? Like, then you know every artist in the world thinks they gonna drop one single and it's gonna go stupid crazy. This is it. When I drop, I'm going 500 times platinum. I'm the only one like me in the world.
Right.
And then so that was.
It's a little more work than that sometimes.
No, not in his brain.
Really? He's still convinced that it's just happening. Drop.
Yeah. Man, me and this dude argue about all manner of things, right, in life. Like, all this dude calls me, he'll just be sitting at home watching TV and he'll just have a damn thought.
Really?
Not exaggerating.
I respect that he's down to just sort of take up your time like that.
Oh,
that
he don't give a fuck. I'm not lying to you, man. He be thinking like, you got to listen to me. See, oh, this is the problem. You don't listen to me. You and I'm like, I give him his time. I'm trying to kill a dude. I'm chasing the controller is dying. Yeah. I'm trying to keep the airphone maybe dying. And he's still talking about.
I stutter a little bit. Not when I rap, though.
Respect. He don't, bro. Yeah. He do not stutter when he raps. Mm. I swear for God.
But okay, how much creative involvement does Big U have in the studio? Like, and how much creative involvement do you allow him to have?
He don't give a fuck.
Oh, okay.
He'd be like, he'll wake up and he'd be like, that's how we know he like it. If he wake up and you start seeing that big ass leg move or that arm start tapping like this,
you got action.
You know it's hot, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I be feeling like,
you
know,
you might
I'm
get
old,
some money behind your video if you start doing that. Mm. You know what I mean?
If I'm old, if they can move me and I'm old, then it's something.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because they'll make a song and it's the greatest song ever.
Uh-huh.
And I've never seen every song be the greatest song after they finish. Like, this is it.
Right.
This is it right here.
It's always better than the last one. That's how it feels.
Bro, and I'm like, I thought the last one was like the one. No, this is it.
You need to have that energy for sure. You know, you got to have that confidence.
We got plenty of that.
Mm,
yeah. I tell them all the time, it's not going to be it until the public say it.
Mm.
Like, we'll know when people start reposting it who never posted your shit.
Mm.
You'll know that. Like his song, like the song Fire just dropped. It was one of them. Would you say we unexpected that song?
Yeah, because, I mean, I gave it to my other folks to hear, you know. I mean, we just dropped it, really, because we didn't really plan to put this shit out. I was just really trying to show homage to, you know, Pablo.
Mm.
You know, he got locked up with the little Fed case.
Yeah, what's going on with that? And how did you guys become boys with him?
He been around since we first got on. Like, he tapped in with the music. You know, he been messing with Unk and all that. So, he just been showing us love. We did a gang of songs. We supposed to drop a tape. You know, I've been out there all last summer, stayed at his spot in Atlanta.
Definitely. I saw you had that video with him, man, and Dub.
Shout out Desto, my nigga too.
Mm.
So it's like we been fucking with Blow, and I ain't really heard much on Blow since he got locked up. Anyways, I ain't heard nobody speaking up for him. I ain't heard no free Blow, none of that. So you know,
and they gonna be all in his face as soon as he come on. They gonna be all in his face
on their feet. So I dropped the Free Hood Rich. Yeah, you know, like we said, it's been going crazy.
Hood Rich Pablo. Yeah.
Well, I know Hood Rich.
That's who we're talking about.
Yeah.
Blow. Oh, Hood Rich's name is Blow.
Yeah, that's his nickname.
Yeah, the tape called that and shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, so I dropped the Free Hood Rich.
I'm thinking Blow was a whole other
person. Yeah, see, you are not allowed to laugh over there. We're going to have another OT episode right here.
Hey, man.
You're in the big leagues now. that's dope though. Yeah, shout out Pablo.
Crazy, you see the sweater though. You
know? People don't want to give him the credit. I mean, he influenced so many goddamn people's styles, rapping wise. Yeah,
that's the crazy part is that everybody always be trying to like under Wright Hubbridge talking about, oh, he been robbed, bro. This is a person that he let in his house, and a dude posts something on Instagram a month later. You know, come on, man. Like, this dude, A1 all the way through, you know what I'm saying? Hubbridge, one of the most solid individuals I ever met in or outside of music.
Very few, you know, solid niggas in the industry. I got, like, you know, for sure, like, Lil Key's solid nigga. Wiz.
Wiz off the top.
Solid nigga I ever met.
Definitely.
You feel me? Like, you know.
Chevy.
We, like you said, we new to this music shit, bro. So we had to, like, you know, really, like, see how that fake industry shit go, dealing with niggas and shit. So when we meet real niggas in the industry, you know, we fuck with
But them. Now you're associated with Big U. Does that create problems for you, or does that create just everybody by default just sort of respects you or treats you a little different?
I mean, it's a gift and a curse. You feel me? Because, you know, some might show love, then some might show a little bit of love. Was they really trying to show love like that? You feel me? You know, it might be just for the look. You don't never know what's in you. You know what
niggas
I'm saying?
Niggas be on alert, like.
So I just say shout out my folks, Wiz, Gunna, Lil Key, Duke, you know.
But all the kinda, slots.
It go like when what you asked me earlier about, like, connections. I tell them all the time, I can get you in the door, but you gotta work the room when you get in the room. You know what I mean? I can get you through there. But if it's like, for instance, I can present a bunch of songs to the radio stations, but if it don't work,
there's only so much they can do.
I'm not gonna go stand on the table and say, play this. You know, it's only so much you can do. Shit gotta work for itself. And I tell them all the time, man, you can't stop working. You gotta just keep putting it out until something sticks. And when something sticks on the wall, it's gonna be a ride from there.
Right.
You can't give up. You gotta believe in your purpose. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
So, and then I feel like we went through a rough patch, and it was rough for them. Let me say that. It was rough for them through the patch that we was going through with that, all that bullshit. So I think it kind of shitted on them, on people giving them the credit they should have had. And then now you see the same style they were introducing, you see people now on the West doing it. When they was first coming, people were saying, oh, y'all sound too much like the South. But then now you see
everybody on the West trying to do melodic music and stuff. And we was probably one of the first ones out of everybody
from the West, it's a distinction. They the first one really, like, from LA, from a hood set where they was doing that music, where people thought they was really from the South. Like, we dropped a whole mixtape and everybody thought they was from the South. Didn't know they was.
Everybody thought we was off from Atlanta.
That was my whole point of the Free Hood Rich. That's why I wanted to shoot that motherfucker on top of the Marathon. So they already know, like, nigga, we from Crenshaw. I mean, the niggas, the streets know, but you feel me?
Definitely. Shit, if they do. Only one knows the homies.
Our streets know.
Yeah, our streets, but a lot of niggas be asking me all the time. I thought they was from. Nah, nigga, they from Crenshaw. And then this is really my blood nephew. Like, you know what I mean? And so it's crazy because he went to Crenshaw. Went to Crenshaw, graduated from Crenshaw.
Me and Dub.
Oh, you're in high school together?
Yeah, me and Dub. So we go way back.
Damn, that's dope.
So I watch
you got tattoos by Dub too? Tats
from Dub.
You got tattoos from Dub.
Tatman Dub. You know, when I met him, it was like, yo, we got to introduce you to this lean dealer. He's like a famous lean dealer. He sells lean to all the rappers. That's what they told me before I met him.
If you want juice, you're hitting Dub all day.
Back in the day.
Back in the day.
Back in the day.
Back in the day, of course.
My man got a store now.
Yeah.
I did want to bust these out because these came in the mail today, and I felt like it was kind of serendipitous. The blue M&Ms. Shout out to YBN Namir's promo team.
Yeah. Oh, you need to see the Crenshaw rolling papers.
Oh, yeah. So
we got the blue that. M&Ms in
Why
the
they
building.
All melted and shit?
I don't know if you guys want to try
you
them.
You had them in your pocket? Hell no.
No, they were in the sweatshirt pocket, and I do think they might have melted a little bit, so I'm glad that you just turned it down.
Yeah. What is it?
Throw them things in the freezer.
It's just time. Blue M&Ms the YBN Namir's team sent over.
Somebody gave them to you?
Yeah, but Pee Wee Longway was always the blue M&M.
No, I know the tape. Yeah.
You know, but I guess YBN Namir's got it too now.
They half melted, though.
They take the
Big U's tempted.
Not at all.
We got some Fritos out there and shit.
Not at all.
I'm looking at it like,
that looks like
what is it?
I'm good.
Yeah, I told you earlier, man, my mama told me say no.
Say no to candy.
I'm the best to say no to anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I respect that.
Yeah. And then, you know, we grew up in that no pill era.
Right, which is now over.
Which is now totally
so
blasted.
That shit is eradicated. It's over.
Dead and gone.
So
sure.
What kind of advice do you give your artists about stuff like drug use, moving around in these streets, et cetera?
I'm going to let them tell you.
Shit, let me tell you this. When I went to jail, it took me like a week just to actually realize the situation I was in because I was so
fucked up on drugs?
Xanax and juice, you feel me? But all the way, though, to the
your
max.
Your glasses is thick. he's telling the story.
Anyway.
This guy's a comedian.
Yeah, no idea. So it took me like a week to really like sober up and realize the little situation I was in. And then when I came home, I was still starting to drift towards that a little bit.
Mm.
And I tell you, ever since I started messing with Unk, I've been completely sober off anything hard for like 4 years.
That's what's up.
You feel me?
Hell yeah.
Which is crazy.
You would be too if you had to look through this every day.
Nah, but it's crazy because like that was like one of the first things he ever told me. He's like, man, if you're gonna be involved in that, I'm not fucking with you. Like if you using it, but selling it, you know what I'm saying? Whatever, I ain't fucking with you.
Watching over a dope addict is not fun.
Nah, it's not. For sure not. So,
and it's just really not a good use of your time.
For the streets, we in the studio all day. Like we workers. Like we all in the studio. Like they be in the studio, I be in the studio. Like we try to work on the best music. You know what I mean? And put that music out. So the streets ain't. It's the last thing on our mind. We trying to be in that lab and create that West Coast fire. You know what I mean? So for me, I'm like I work hard. They work hard, Unk put us in those situations to where we can thrive, and we bringing it to the world, you know what I mean?
That's what's up. Hell yeah.
Yeah, we don't fuck around.
Drugs are bad.
And drugs, no. Say no to
hell
say
no. Hell no. Okay. Yeah, I'm waiting on this one to say something. I'm waiting on this one to say something.
Drugs are bad.
Cannabis.
That's my statement. That's all I got to say.
Does he let you guys smoke weed in the studio?
It's weed.
You might get a contact high.
Weed ain't even smoke a drug, weed. Bro.
What if you get a contact high?
You can't snort lines in the studio.
No.
But you
I
can
have
the
sounds.
You can smoke some weed, though.
Hey, I had some rappers come in here and be doing lines right before the interview, and I'm like, oh.
Oh, y'all get all y'all party.
Okay, you're on that time. Interesting.
Yeah, different. Oh, no. Hold on now. Let's get this straight. Somebody at this table better not be saying they're square.
Who's not the square?
Who's the square?
With glasses,
for sure it's
clear. Yeah, well, yeah, it ain't me. You know what I'm saying? But I am the square.
Right.
But some of them, I like how you Negroes are cleaned up. Negroes he got clean and he don't do nothing.
So you're having a parent-teacher conference. You're like, yeah, I'm a good kid.
Bro.
That Zoom did fuck it up for us. Like we got to get our shit together.
Like, we having a live, had a teacher's conference. Okay, so watch this. Somebody going to be on this thing saying, he lying? He just got hired.
I just saw that nigga.
He's lying. Yes. He just sipped. Okay, but anyway.
Snitching is bad, too.
That part, I don't condone.
Snitching is wrong.
Exactly. Wrong. See? Okay, we're getting close.
You know what? The day I realized that some rappers aren't telling the truth when they tell you that they don't do drugs was a day where like Famous Dex like publicly quit lean a few years ago. Yeah. And it happened to be the first day that I ever went to the Sauce and Swap meet. Guess who was in the parking lot buying some lean?
Dex.
I was like, oh, it's some rappers are liars.
Yeah.
Shout out Dex.
Exactly. Shout out Dex.
Damn, he just.
Shout out Five. Who's Five? What's your next song? Shout out Five. What's so
and I wanted to say one thing before we wrap this up or anything, too, is free C-Mac the Loke.
Oh, yeah, man. Nightbug.
He's just starting to catch a wave, man. How are they going to take him down just like that?
You know?
I just seen him on D-Jack, D-Jack live, lifting weights.
Yeah.
Oh,
his workouts are amazing.
Yeah, on the ground,
doing the burpees, everything.
Yeah.
I love it.
Finna get the Popeyes.
Yeah.
Five special.
I learned how he made breakfast the other day on Instagram, and it was just like a big thing of oats and some like sweetener. I was pretty hyped on that. Is he invited to the studio?
Some who?
Is he yeah, just he had is. Some oats yeah, and some
always,
sugar.
Yeah, he is. Always but hold on. Yeah, he invited, but he did what? With some oats and sweetener.
It was like he was showing his breakfast routine, and it was just like some oats and some sweetener. And it was just like, it didn't really look like much of a breakfast, but he was saying that that's what he eats for breakfast.
Yeah. Mm.
That's because Popeyes ain't open yet.
Yeah.
That's real.
Find me.
Hey, did his voice really like that?
I mean, if you watch his Instagram, it's a lot more like low energy, and then the way he was on here was like mega high energy, but it still kind of felt like a version of the same thing, you know?
That's what's her name? It's Michelle.
Uh-huh.
Remember Michelle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was her voice. That sounds like.
I think when he get drunker, his shit go higher.
Yeah.
Oh, you been around him before?
Yeah. That's...
He always got the OE in hand. He actually inspires me to eat Popeyes, honestly. Yeah, it seems more tempting because I'm watching him talk about how good it is, and it kind of gets into my brain, dude.
Like, he like their number one salesman right now. Popeye, for real.
They cast him out. Had them Popeye burgers, the sandwiches.
When everybody went crazy over them.
And he told me he'd been there all those times, and he only had the apple pie. He never had the apple pie. I'm like, what?
You didn't have apple pie?
Oh, I had the apple pie every time I went there. It's a bad habit. It was a lot healthier eating at Popeyes before.
Which one's better, McDonald's or Popeyes?
Oh, man. I probably had the McDonald's one way more. I kind of like the... I don't know. I got to have them both a few more times.
It was too hyped up for me. When I had the sandwich, I was like,
yeah.
Oh, the chicken sandwich?
Yeah, it was too hyped up. It was too much hype on it.
Yeah, I remember when dudes were coming around trying to sell us Popeye's chicken sandwiches. It was like 2 days old for like $20.
Niggas were slinging Popeye's.
They had them refrigerated and all that shit.
That shit's crazy.
It was a good time. Good time in history.
I got a question.
Oh.
When is your song dropping?
I've been working for 2 years.
On one solo song?
Project. Oh. Like Dr. Dre. Yeah.
On my solo project. I've been working for 2 years on it. It's like the detox and then the relapse and then one more detox. You know what I mean? So we're on that stage right now.
Yeah. 2 years. Who all you got on your project?
I got Mozzie, E-40. I got a record out with E-40 right now. That's why my voice is messed up because we were shooting a video.
I just assume you're always like this.
We were shooting a video all weekend and my boy got me yelling and... So we just wrapped the video up. I got Mozzie on my album. My boy Job, I got a song with Ricky P. So yeah, just working, man. Just trying to just make the best song that I can, you know what I mean?
That's what's
up. Unk is the one that really A&R'd my record.
Right.
So like they said, I played it for him. He woke up. He in my car. I picked him up. He woke up. He's like, "What's that?" We was in his front yard for 25 minutes. He like, hold on, no.
Yeah.
You ain't leaving, you know what I mean? So we take it to OT. Uncle OT A&R they made me a hit.
Wow.
So that's the story behind my E-40 record. Like, went to the lab, got us working the record, and next thing I know, I'm in a video with E-40.
Fuck yeah. That's amazing.
You need Mozzie. And then Fi came to me. And I'm like, "Fire, who you gonna get on your project?" He said, "Nobody."
Yeah, I don't really want niggas on my. We got a lot of features already, so it'd be like, you feel me? It get to the point where you just want niggas to hear some of your shit.
Yeah.
So make sure everybody stream that.
Nothing clear, you feel me? That.
I hate when I want to go listen to a rapper for the first time and someone puts on a song with them and four other people.
Yeah, man. Like, come on,
your project don't got
listen
nobody.
To my shit is five people.
I got Wiz on there and Snoop, but that's probably like that's it. But the rest, I just and you know smoke. But
I don't care.
Like this,
the three songs we got. What's the name of them?
Free Hood Rich, Love Your Girl, and I did one with Wiz artist Young Deji, called Ghost. The video
I like that,
for that one too. Go crazy.
Yeah, you gotta hear these.
Too. I gotta hear it. Yeah, I'm trying to come to the studio. Let's go.
You got like 20 songs right now. With too.
I'll pull up with AD. You guys want AD verse? I'm selling them for the low.
Oh, for sure.
I'm giving him 20% or whatever I get from you. So that's gonna be good.
Yeah. I thought AD was gonna be here.
No, but we're doing your podcast with him. Me and
okay.
him. Yeah.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm finna ask some ratchet questions.
Ooh. Okay.
When was the last time you slapped a motherfucker?
You guys get me or him?
You.
I put a guy in a guillotine choke a couple years ago.
Where did the no jumper name come from?
Gucci, Bricks. Balling like an athlete, but got no jumper.
Damn.
It's a metaphor for.
How long have you been white?
We black? Getting money.
How long have you been white?
DC black? Young Fly asked me if I was white or black.
No, how long have you been white, black? Like,
oh, define that.
When did you cross over?
Yeah, because see, you understand the culture so well.
You are, you're gonna regret saying that. And how using that against everybody who ever says anything to me.
I understand the culture, so fuck you.
Uncover that.
I just got a look to say you are no longer a big you. I'm like, from the culture, I got a look from somebody over there like, what the fuck are you talking about? They just looked at me like,
Laura?
Yes.
Don't put any ideas in his head.
She looked at me like, don't you ever say that again.
I don't know how to answer that.
How many damn tattoos do you have, bro?
A whole bunch, I guess. I just noticed I have one that says no future the other day. I'm like, damn. I forgot I got that like 20 years ago.
When did you get your first tattoo?
18? Straight edge tattoo? Basically saying I'm never going to drink or smoke. You should get one. Oh, you should start claiming straight edge. That's a good idea.
So how did that go?
What school did you go to?
Nashua High School.
Are you from here, California?
No.
Where
are you from? New Hampshire.
New Hampshire?
Yeah.
You from New Hampshire?
Yeah.
New Hampshire.
What? How the fuck did you get here?
That's a very good question.
So well.
But that's the thing is, you're from a place where it matters so much where you're from, and I'm from a place nobody's ever even heard of.
Right.
Yeah. It's a weird
Boston,
dynamic.
Right? That's wild.
Especially in LA, it's all about where you're
like
from.
I like the initials, though. You from NH.
No homo.
From NH.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and yeah.
No homo.
No homo.
What the fuck? Interview's over, bro. Interview's over.
Hey, what the fuck?
The time is doing up, man. What the hell?
He's not from no homo.
Hey, man. What the fuck? Hey. Oh, man. Hey, he didn't get the memo?
Bruh.
It's the NH, man. At least say Nipsey Hussle.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, too, yeah.
Like, what the hello?
To be fair, I knew about No Homo way before I knew about Neighborhood.
He takes back his previous comments.
Again, I am from New
Hampshire.
Yeah,
so that comment makes sense.
You don't have no goddamn coaches.
That's the best way I can imagine to end this.
He has no culture, and the interview was over. Like, he's doing this and he pulled up with a red shirt on any goddamn way.
Big U, I am not in the gang, so I'm very, very diplomatic. I don't know about any of this crazy gang lexicon. It doesn't make sense to me.
And a lexicon is dictionary. Dedicting. Yeah,
that's good. Well, I busted that out because I know you got a pretty good vocab as well.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. I'm going to be laughing about that for years.
Was that
just that exchange that we just had? I like the initial. No homo.
Yeah, it was like,
it really could at least win Nipsey Hussle, though. Like, tell him, at least go hustle. At least go hustle.
I would have been full white boy out of nowhere.
From New Hampshire.
He was just about to get accepted.
Wait a minute.
And bro just got his nowhere. Look, he just got his tattoo at 18.
Damn.
Like, is that your first time I had sex, too?
No, I might have been 17 on that one.
Prove it, bro.
I cut my dick open and count the rings like a tree or something. No.
I don't know how you gonna do it. But maybe you might need her to do it.
This like, nigga.
I don't know, bro. If you got your first tattoo at 18, you probably only got some first at 18.
Yeah. Is that bad? 17. You supposed to get a tattoo before that?
Hell, you supposed to get some before that.
Oh, yeah. I definitely lost my virginity before I got a tattoo for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Although it might have been kind of close.
I don't know.
It was 14, 15, I think, when I started these. Man.
What was her name?
I'm not going to air her out. She got a life.
But that's what y'all do. Like, on these interviews, y'all air people's shit out.
Not the girl I had sex with when I was 17.
She's 17. You got a whole nother girl now, bro. You don't give a damn about her. Her kids are your age.
You're right.
That's the problem.
Watch this.
There's probably enough girls in New Hampshire named Melissa that nobody's going to be able to figure out which one it was.
Right.
Shout out to Melissa. Thank you for ushering me into the age of intercourse.
Shout out Melissa.
Hey, look.
And every Melissa out there.
Big Hughes shouting out the girl.
On YouTube.
That was solid.
On YouTube, it's going to say Big U asks
Adam
the question. And Melissa, who's Melissa?
Right. We must find Melissa.
Yes, sir.
We got to talk to her. And if there's any girls who had sex with Big U in the 80s who wants to come on here and talk about it, that'd be fine as well, yeah.
I was knocking them down.
Or if you got knocked out by the roller rink, slide in my DMs.
I was knocking them down, dog. Yo. I had a Jerry curl. I wasn't old and wrinkled
right.
in. I was knocking them down, dog.
Hard. And also, Big U wants all the kids out there to know that he's going to buy you some Chrome Hearts,
what
everybody.
The hell?
He's got a scholarship fund to buy Chrome Hearts for kids out there. Yeah.
That's where I got mine from.
Chrome Hearts.
Wow. Amazing.
For everyone.
Thank you guys so much for coming in.
For sure, bro.
Means
Thank
a lot.
You. Thank you.
Much respect. Big U, massive respect. Everybody go watch Hip Hop Uncovered.
Yes, sir.
Hip Hop Uncovered.
Go watch
Great that. Way to spend a couple hours.
We saw you in Miami.
Oh yeah, he ran off from
at Rolling Loud, and he took off on us.
I don't think I made this motion.
I think you thought we was gonna rob you or something.
He was walking fast. He was walking like a real white man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Y'all didn't even let him shout the music out. Y'all want to talk about when Adam ran?
Now they punked me out. Yeah. That I remember that weekend though. There was
why
a guy.
Why did Adam run?
Story.
Why did Adam run?
I don't really like the walking super fast through a crowd thing. Is more about like I don't want to stop and take photos, so I'm gonna just walk so nobody can even talk to me. Survival mechanism.
That seemed like the energy you was giving
out of town.
Next time, Big U's gonna be watching my ass. So.
Yeah. Right. Not watching your ass.
Watching.
Not washing.
Back to the no homo.
What the hell wrong with this man? Like, man, what's this man?
You got it. Come on.
Hey, bro. We gotta have a joke with Adam.
Adam, come on, Adam.
They're gonna go beat my ass in the alley.
Man.
Big U and the gang. Shout out, No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. Check us on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes, like, comment, subscribe. No Jumper if you wanna support. NoJumper.com if you wanna support. Big U, we gotta get you on the Kendama.
Yeah, don't get him started on the Kendama.
Every night in the studio, he's gonna stop sleeping.
All right.
He'll be Kendama-ing out. Appreciate you guys.